the heavens up there. Not necessarily what we call astronomy, but moon and sun and stars and all that stuff way up there in the sky. Is there any, are there any, can we use native knowledge in this? What kind of native knowledge exists in this area? I heard yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, for you can use it for like direction finding, weather forecasting. Okay, more? Yes?
Time of day.
Time of day? Okay. Pardon?
Time of night.
Time of night? Okay. No, really, that's a good one. You know, it never occurred to me until a couple of years ago, living in Puslia. Where is Catherine's not in here? I always have to be really careful what I say when she's around. So now I can say anything. We sat down and we started talking about time of day and divisions of time. And in Koyukon, and you guys all know for your own areas, in Koyukon, I can't remember how many different divisions of the day without using a clock, right? How many words there are for the different parts of the day and the different parts of the night, times of day, times of night. And I mean, honestly, I had never thought of this in my life, right? When there were not mechanical clocks around, people had other clocks. What other means did they use to tell, you know, like for time? There's the Big Dipper, huh? The way the tail of the Big Dipper moves around? Okay, the moon for like times of the, uh-huh. Okay, and are there, I know from reading that there are, at least in some areas of the state, the point of rising of the sun goes around the horizon, right? Another good one? Yes. All right, there's another tradition, an entirely different tradition where you but still, it's a way of telling the time by the behavior of animals, roosters or other animals and that sort of stuff. Or what else? What other ways are there of telling time? Yes.
Oh.
You know, that's the difference between native people and white people. I never know I'm hungry until I see what time it is. Okay. All right. Another thing on like on the Kaikuk River, the salmon show up about the same time as what happens? The swallows show up, and then there's like the fluff flying off of the willow thing. There are things in nature, in the cycles of nature, that tell you time. Okay, there's a great one. I mean, look at what you can do with time, with native knowledge, exploring the idea of time. And you know also, if you're heavily into language, that languages deal with time in different ways, right? So if you're a person who is sophisticated in your native language, you might look at the language itself and the way it categorizes time and the way time operates. There are other things too. In terms of, we're getting back to astronomy, stars and moon and stuff. Where did it all come from? Right? Yeah, the stories that tell you where all the, you know, the different constellations came from, the stories about the moon and the sun in every area of Alaska. I think there are stories that talk about the moon and the sun and how they got there. So you can also go into why the world is the way it is in studying this kind of thing. Okay, right, we already mentioned meteorology or climatology, the study of climate and weather. Now there's one where you can just, you know, you can really go to it in class. Is the only thing that counts in weather barometers and the weather forecast on the radio? It's like they used to say about, in Wainwright, about one old man who used to really talk a lot, and he said, well, don't worry about him, he's the radio, you know? And he said this to me because I couldn't understand what he was saying when he would sit next to me and go for hours. And he said, oh, he's just like the radio. But he was also the radio in the sense that he also told you what the weather was going to be, you know? Yes?
We've got a possibility of
Yeah, that would be real neat. You know, since with the weather, with the radio stations coming in all the state, you know, I wonder what's, if people are paying as much attention as they used to the signs, you know, the stars wobbling around in the sky and all the other things that people watch for to predict the weather. Also, what is weather? You know, okay, we can teach climatology in the classroom and we say, oh yes, here's how the weather works. There's low pressure systems and high pressure systems and it's all mechanical. And it just works because the Earth rotates and it's hot in one place and it's cold in another. But aren't there other ways of looking at that? Does the native tradition teach you anything else about what weather is? Yes?
One time my mother, I think, because it went through snow.
Mm-hmm.
It went through rain.
Mm-hmm. 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 Okay, and how about this, like, are there in native traditions something that says what cold is? I know there is in the Koyukon Athabascan tradition, if somebody tells you what the cold is. The cold is not just cold air, it's something. It's something that's aware. It's something that has a spirit to it. And in the traditional way you can influence the cold to come or go by doing certain things. Is that true in other parts of the country? For other people? Or like heat. I think there is something called Achtich Doriga, which means the spirit of cold, you know? And then there is a spirit of heat. And wind is something. It's not just air moving. Wind is something. You know, now I don't know if you... Is anybody going to help me out in this at all? Yes.
When we have snowstorms, oftentimes it's associated with someone having just finished their muffler, they're wearing new mufflers.
Uh-huh.
And if they're working on their mufflers, we had quite a storm.
Okay, so what does that mean about the weather? I think what I'm getting at here a little bit is in many Alaskan Native traditions, the people, through the knowledge of their old traditions, have the idea that the world around us is aware of us. You know? How about Koyukon there? Come on, you guys. Don't be too quiet on me. Yes, Bob?
I'm just pointing out that if you're doing something out, I think that this reading, the first thing you have the two books of knowledge and trying to bring them together.
Yeah.
Talking about two very different kinds of knowledge because Western knowledge is obvious.
Uh huh.
Focus.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a really good point, Bob, because we're talking about two completely different kinds of bodies of knowledge, right? I mean, the Western scientific view says that the world works a certain way, you know. And we, like I was raised to believe, this is absolutely the truth. This is it, you know? You want to know how the world works? Okay, the scientists will tell you how the world works. Then you might go into a different culture and people, through their traditions, have learned that the world works differently, right? Whereas the meteorologist might say, well, the weather is caused by just physical things. other people, many other people in the world say, no, the weather is caused by spiritual things. The weather can be influenced by what you're doing.
Yes. The culture from where I am, it's not as it used to be. Our ancestors were very animistic. They believed that spirit dwelt in every living thing, like Satana.
Well, yes.
But when it gets down to practical knowledge, you know the systems are different. If you're stuck out there and don't have a thermometer yet, it's nice to know signs of weather changing.
Yes.
So some of that traditional knowledge is still very practical,
yes.
Even though it might have different weather.
Absolutely. It's important
to be able to tell what the weather's going to do. If you're
right.
Cold on here, it's likely to stay cold.
Right.
Or,
so there's kind of two levels to it. One is it's important for your own survival and subsistence and stuff. And another is there's sort of these other areas that are more intellectual, right? Where, as you're saying, in the tradition, in some areas these traditions have changed and people view the world differently now, and in other areas it's still more in the traditional way. But I guess what I'm getting at is the idea that teachers could be opening their eyes to more than just the practical, but also the intellectual part of the native tradition. I don't judge one or the other as being right or wrong, in the sense that you talk about the traditional belief of animism or the belief that the earth is spiritual. I personally am not involved in making a judgment about what is right or what is wrong. I believe that that tradition is valuable and important, and I think people should be, if the older traditional beliefs are there in the community, I would like to see the children have a chance to learn them and decide for themselves what they want to believe about the way the world works. And I personally don't see any conflict at all between, say, if you have traditional beliefs in your community and you have Christian beliefs in your community. I don't see any conflict myself. That's my own personal feeling. But that's another issue that we probably shouldn't get started on. Okay, how about geography? We talked a little bit about geography this morning. Certainly you get into, in your classes, talking about landforms and geology and all that kind of stuff. What can you do with native knowledge in that area? Okay, looking at what kind of native knowledge can you use there?
Looking at landscape.
Mm-hmm. 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 Okay, what kind of in other words, you would look at them using what the knowledge of your elders and your traditions is of that landscape, right? Okay, one of the things we talked about this morning is place name is a good example of that. Yes?
Mm-hmm. I was just going to comment that, you know, with all these things, you know, as we've mentioned, you could, if you're talking about geography, if there are any beliefs as to how were these formed, you know,
mm-hmm.
how did this land become this way, you know, what are the mountains, how did they mm-hmm. get there, you
mm-hmm.
know, and looking at the native beliefs as to how they were formed or why they are or what they are. I think sometimes we also have to examine very closely the questions that you're asking. I think our tendency would be to say, how was that mountain made?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a question might also be, what is that mountain?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think we would normally ask that in our culture. Well, it's a mountain. It's, you know, you know what a mountain is. Well, it's a mountain. But there may be other ideas, like you were saying about the wind. You know,
mm-hmm.
you might say, how is the wind formed, instead of considering the possibility of what is the wind?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then comparing that, you know, with our ideas, discussing, you know, most
yeah.
of thought, you know, is a lot of branches that can come on. These individual beings expanding not only the student's knowledge, but there's this entire conceptual
yes.
framework.
Yes. Okay. So you're again talking. We're talking about two different ways of looking at the same thing. Or not necessarily different. They might be the same, but two ways from the native tradition and from the non-native tradition of looking at the landscape, right? What else? What else have people done with geography? Yes.
Well, what are the geographic factors that cause people to settle in certain places? Were they geographic factors at all? Why did people settle where they did? Why did they settle in Point Hope? What was in Point Hope that caused people to settle there for thousands of years? And in Barrow, or in one of the villages along the river, or something like that. What are the natural resources that are there that would make it a factor that would cause people to settle? And what is a pressure ridge? Why does maybe culture have a pressure ridge instead of whaling country and all of the subsistence country?
So there's a whole thing you can look at it from a practical standpoint. Why do people settle in a certain place? Okay, does anybody in here know of any places where it's perfectly good ground, there's nothing wrong with it, but for no matter what, you would not camp overnight there? Huh? Anybody know of any places like that? Can you think of any? In your area, would you camp just anywhere? If I say, hey, you know, I set my tent up here, are there any places where you wouldn't stay with me if I'd set up? Yes. Yeah, that'd be real disappointing. I've done exactly that. It just ruins your whole night. How about for other reasons? Yes? Yeah. Okay, so like what kind of places where a person might not stay?
Graveyard.
A graveyard. Yeah. Yeah, it might be really nice and grassy, but so like graveyards, for example, or other places that, to me, okay, you know, I might just stop and say, all right, good place here to camp. And somebody else might say, no way to camp there. So land has meanings other than just, it's not just a piece of land, it has some kind of meaning to it, right? And you can look at different meanings that are involved with land, like for one person this piece of land might mean nothing, and for another person this piece of land might be the worst place in the world that they could ever think of spending any time, because it has a certain kind of meaning. I know even in my own culture, where people don't worry very much about that sort of thing, I would like to know how many of my friends would spend the night camping graveyard. I know they wouldn't have me along with them, right? But not just graveyards, right? They're places that are spiritual in some way or another. So here again, you can look at geography from a number of standpoints. We talked about landforms and how they came into being. The geologists would tell us, oh, because of the glacier, or because the land crunched up here, or something like that. Whereas a native person might say, that, no, I can tell you how that place got to be the way it is, and then go into a story, right? Why it happens to look the way it does, and then from there, what that place means. So again, you can look at, I really think that we should think really hard about ways of bringing these kinds of knowledge together.
Something I know that most people here are probably more experienced than I am, but for something I know that I've done in the past, I'm just finding out that I should be more aware of is presenting things as facts that are, facts or theories from my viewpoint, in terms of, for instance, the movement of the native people here from Siberia. You know, well, to me that seems to be, maybe I don't know exactly when it happened, but you know, that's my belief, that that's how it happened. And I recall presenting that at one point, and I don't know, you know, how much if I said, you know, that was exactly how it happened. But it was a little offensive, you know. The comments that I got back was, we've always been here, what are you talking about? You know, and so I'm just starting now to kind of be aware that, you know, before I present something as a well-established fact or theory, you know, trying to you know, just being more aware of what is affecting my viewpoint and not affecting someone else's.
Exactly, because in a way, you know, like science, the whole idea of Western science, that's kind of a belief system. That's a way of looking at the world and explaining the world. But it's not the only one. There are other ways of looking at the world and explaining the world. It's like, I gave this, when I was teaching at a university down south, I gave a long lecture about the North American Native people and where they came from, and I was telling just like this, you know, this is what happened at such and such time, and people came across the Bering Straits, and all this sort of stuff went on, and I explained the whole thing, and a little hand went up way in the back of the class, huge class, 300 people, and his hand went up, and it happened to be a guy from Southeast Alaska, and he said, how do you know that's true? He said, our people say, got a whole different story for where we came from. You know, and you're standing up there and telling us we came from such and such, but I know another way of explaining it, right? What could I say? I thought it was one of the nicest points that had ever been made to me. Was, okay, you teacher, have accepted one point of view. Now let me give you a different one, right? Yeah, Pete.
I was having the same problem, and the way I've gotten around was just to explain what a theory is. And then take it from there. This is a theory.
Mm-hmm.
And other there are other theories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I long ago learned to do that when, for instance, having discussed evolution in the class. You know, it's just long been a problem, you know, by saying that, you know, I'm not necessarily telling you what I think is a fact, but, you know, what we're going to learn here is what is the commonly held evolutional theory, and there may be other explanations for it, but this is one explanation, you know, that I want, and I'm just starting now to have that mindset with a whole range of things, but I'm also trying to learn to start incorporating not only my theory, but starting to present them side by side with the other applicable theories, not being so snobbish about, you know, what I consider to be
mm-hmm.
my knowledge.
Yeah.
You want to say that some people think. Other people think that,
right.
Well, I mean, we'll get around in a little while to talking about how we can bring other experts in. Oh, fine, you know, if I'm an expert on evolution, I can go to my class and say, okay, here's the evolution way that we evolution people look at things. And then I can bring in an elder from the community to say, now here's another way of looking at it, right? And we should come around to discussing that. And that, I think, may be even better because, okay, if I'm an expert on evolution, great, I can talk about evolution. Then I will bring in an expert on another way of looking at the same thing. Because what is a village but a whole bunch of experts living together? And you've got all these incredible people living around you. And the fact that for so many years these people have been excluded from the schools is a great tragedy, but finally they're starting to get into the schools. It's a shame, and I know that people wouldn't intentionally waste all that knowledge. Nowadays, I think there's no excuse for not bringing these experts in and letting them talk about what they're experts about. And one of the things I'm trying to help bring out here is the idea that it's not just the facts, and it's not just how to build a sled, but let's start thinking also about how to think about the world. Because one of the things I think we haven't really gotten around to yet, for the most part in our education, is that we still assume that there's one right way to think about the world. We, meaning Western teachers. Okay, we happen to have truth with a capital T, whether it's science or evolution or whatever else you want to talk about. Now I think it's time to recognize, okay, I will present my culture's way of viewing the world, and then I'll go and I'll bring in some experts from the community and they can present their way of looking at the world, and then the kids can decide for themselves, or they can go away with both. Gee, that's a lot better than going away with just one, right? Not only that, but the teacher might go away with both too, which is even better, right? Yes, I'm sorry, this is kind of a bad setup.
One of the things I always want to say to this is that the most important thing that we learn about history is there's a value in and that someone somewhere decided to take the event to importance and they will take it to the world. And of all the events that happen, that is what comes to this world, so it's important.
Mm-hmm. However, if you were missing, that's not the only thing you have. That's what happened with us. That's the most important thing.
So, now this gets around to what my friend Tom here was telling me this morning about. Are you willing to do that, Tom? To talk about the little story you were telling me about. It isn't so much the whole thing about what the Englishman told you.
You Americans are so, or like your bodies are.
Yeah, right.
It was a funny invitation. There were some people from British Congress who were involved. And they were explaining the theoretic approach, which was to simply take almost any concept and then just carry that through. And that all the things the schools required to be done with that thing, plus a whole lot of other information about local history or local police, whatever. Something like, here's someone asking a question about all that's well good, but we teach fourth grade, there are certain things I have to do, like in social studies, we have to teach the states in the fourth grade. And when she got through explaining why she had to do this, and she said, why is the American just so preoccupied with the idea that there's a body of knowledge of what must exist, we call educating. It's the concept that I thought, the concept of finding not the knowledge itself. So we have a violent vision, I was back in a whole bunch of others.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can fit the body of knowledge that fits the situation, and it also is, I think.
So this, I'm thinking that that's sort of agreeing what you were just talking about, in a way that the idea that it's the process that matters, it's the process of learning that matters, it's teaching people how to learn, it's teaching people how to deal with knowledge, more so than the specific body of knowledge, right, whether it's from over here or over here. It's knowledge that you're trying to deal with in school, not whether or not Dubuque or whatever town is the capital of Iowa. It's that there are places and that they have meanings for people. You know, maybe that's a lousy particular example, but you know what I'm saying. It's,
I agree with you wholeheartedly, but I'd like to know how you think your ICBS scores into that and they become very important.
Well, see, now I knew when people was going to come up here. and somebody in here is going to answer that question. Yes, Mike. Well, there's one answer.
Well, I don't know if there was any indication that choosing a different body of knowledge in fact was the cause of big doing less well in this part of the test.
Except that on
ICBS
scores, you'll get
the
capital of the
Iowa.
Yes,
but that means you miss a couple. You know, a lot of other stuff that you can't do.
And that also doesn't speak real well for the test, right? I mean, if the test is, if the whole idea is to teach the process of learning and dealing with knowledge, then somehow it seems like that the test ought to be representing your ability to do that rather than your ability, I know it's a real problem.
I agree wholeheartedly that there's that reality
yes.
that teachers are continually faced with.
Yeah.
I'm not really quite sure how valid that is in terms of that there may be some very specific minor points that can't be covered through a thematic approach, and I'm not saying that I do so any more than anyone else, but for instance, if you wish to take a subject that you wish to delve into for a few weeks. There are very few subjects, I think, that you can't tie into with everything, whether or not you want to take weather. You can tie in English in the writing of things, the mathematics, and the computation of various things. You know, so I don't think that there, I mean, I think there's very few subjects that are so limited that almost all the different areas you can tie in. What is, you know, what's the weather like in the youth, you know? You know, so I think in most cases, if you wish to take that approach and feel comfortable, you know, and begin experimenting with that approach, that I can't see how anything that's covered in a regular curriculum that can't be done through that.
Let me just ask you this question, too. On that score, I forgot. I'll think of it. Yes. I really did. I just totally forgot. Well, okay, you know, and that reminds me of You're saying this reminds me of what I was going to say just a minute ago. Is would, let me ask you this, would the children be more interested in the subject if it had more local relevance? Okay, you know what made me think of this, doing this whole thing right here, is I went into a school in Wainwright and had some interesting conversations with a teacher who I was real impressed with. And we were discussing, and I was saying, hey, you know, I just went in to see him because he was a science teacher. And I said, have you ever thought of, and then I started talking about this subject. He says, of course I've thought of it. I think of it all the time. But I have to, my kids have to score on the test, and I have to prepare my kids for college and stuff like this. And he walked over to his desk, and he lifted up a chart of the human skull.